Welcome back to episode 213 of Tall Boy Radio. And as we always say, who knows where it goes when the beer flows? Well, it's flowing to a place that's 8 hours away. If you're turning back your clock and following time zones, that's right. We're over to somewhere in the far west of Canada. But before we get to our guest, let's say hello to Gazza.
Evening all, evening the world. Yeah, looking forward to this. I say it's one of most times when we have a guest on. It's fantastic just to sort of speak to them about their experiences and get them on. And even better when it's the first time of somebody that we haven't had on previously. And it's always great that we get sort of international guests on. So really looking forward to this. And actually talking first up potentially about a topic that actually isn't too far from home. But there's a little teaser for you. So I'll leave that there for you.
Indeed, indeed. Traveling far, far, far away to hear about a place that is very close to our home. So without further ado, let's introduce our guest for this week. Trevor, did you want to say hello and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hello, everybody. I'm Trevor Caswell from Kamloops, BC, Canada. So yeah, over on the west coast, I guess if we need to relate it to Vancouver, it's about 4 hours east of Vancouver. And yeah, so, you know, when you guys got in touch, I've listened to some podcasts, but I never got to see that opening video before. You guys are really rubbing it in with the beer drinking, and I've got a coffee going. So if I disappear for a few minutes, I've just gone downstairs.
That's fine.
Yeah, we are just a few hours ahead of you, though. So, yeah, it's sort of coming up to sort of 10 past 8, well, 10 past 8 in the evening here. So, we're a little bit ahead of you. So we'll let you off on that one.
Is that your first beer of the day?
Second beer of the day.
I don't believe you as possible.
Scout's honor.
Okay. Okay, so the reason why we invited Trevor on is A, we like to hear about something different each week, and certainly we enjoy music, and we both have quite eclectic and very different tastes in music as well. However, it was highlighted to me by my brother, who got in contact and said he'd heard a song called The Old Man of Mao, and the guy who sang it was not local to us. Mao Cop, if you don't know, is obviously very close to us. It's a small town on a rather steep hillside, isn't it? With made famous by the Folly or Castle at the top. However, Trevor recorded a song called The Old Man of Mao, which, actually, first before I get to you, Trevor, do you know what The Old Man of Mao is, Gazza?
No, are you going to tell me? Trevor, are you going to tell me?
Well, go on, sure. Trevor.
Yeah, well, it's a rock formation up there on the hill, and if you look at it by just the right angle, it looks like a man.
Mm. There you go. So Trevor, there's another place like the Winking Man on the way to Leek, where there's a certain rock formation. And it looks like the sort of side of a face. And when you drive up to it, it looks like the eyes open. And then you pass in, it looks like the eye closes. And then as you carry on, it opens again. So it looks like it winks depending on where you drive past. So maybe a bit like that.
A little. This is like a stack of rocks that they stack together that look like, you know, if it's a silhouette of a man.
Okay.
You never heard of it, have you?
No.
No, neither have I.
No, genuinely.
So when we talk about Mao Cop, we think about the castle, and that is it, don't we?
And I've been to Mao Cop, I won't say hundreds of times, but like multiple tens of times in my lifetime, and I've never actually heard of that, no.
No. So, Trevor, why don't you tell us, why don't you educate us? Well, like, how did you find out about it?
Well, I found out about it from, can you see it? I got it the wrong way. There we go. The book there.
Yeah.
Old Man of Mao, Alan Garner and Roger Hill. Roger Hill, I think, took the photographs. And my mom got it for me when I was a kid at just like a, it wasn't a garage sale, but, you know, a flea market type sort of thing. I don't know why she thought I would maybe like it. And I sort of took thought it was kind of neat. It seemed like, you know, the two kids throughout the story, they're kind of running through the neighborhood and who's this old man of Mao? And yeah, I grew up in Lower Nicola, which is outside of Merritt, which is about an hour away from where I live now. So I grew up in a little village, and we had a little Candy Mountain. And, you know, just you run through the neighborhood sort of in this sort of similar fashion. So I don't know, like, you know, is that why this sort of, you know, made these kids made sense to me? And then the English countryside is sort of magical to us over here.
You see, that's strange because, like, I can imagine the Canadian countryside being absolutely phenomenal to us. So it's strange, isn't it, in different perceptions. Yeah. And I'm just curious. So you say your mum sort of picked up that book. Did she have a particular interest in, I don't know, like UK history or follies or castles, or was it just something that she saw and just picked up randomly?
No, probably more that I had a sort of interest in England and that sort of thing. Right. when a bunch of my great grandparents, the old London Illustrated News, if you know, they had a bunch of those, and I was really taken by that sort of thing, right? And right. So, you know, she probably just put those two together, I suppose.
Okay.
It's fascinating.
It is yeah.
Fascinating. And like you say about you being fascinated by the British countryside, and Gaz says about us being fascinated with the Canadian. My dad was in Canada last year, and he shared some pictures with me. Phenomenal. Absolutely beautiful country.
Yeah.
And although I will say, in terms of the local area, it is one of the more significant pieces of just anything around us, I would suggest. You know what I mean?
There's
Morton Hall, and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of sort of, I suppose, geological formations or stuff like that, rock faces, follies, castles, you know, there aren't significantly, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think if you know you drive half an hour 40 minutes away, yeah, there's a few, but certainly within, you know, 10-15 minute drive, I can't think of any others really. And actually it's quite striking, because I suppose you've got a place called the Cloud, which is out towards a place called Congleton, which is like a rock face, and that's quite notorious. But I suppose Mau Cop, it sort of dominates the landscape. So when you do look at it from the local surrounding villages, so Redheath, Church Lawton, Alsager, and it literally is, you can see it, can't you? And it is the most dominant feature in the landscape. So I can understand why it would draw some people towards it and it be noticed. I mean, obviously, it's ideal where it's placed to be a castle. And if you are going to defend it from somebody back in the day in the history of it, it's perfect because it's on top of the hill, you know. But yeah, it absolutely is dominant in the local landscape.
Yeah, it is. But I don't know how many people outside of Staffordshire and Cheshire have necessarily heard of it. So to find someone in Canada singing about it is mind-blowing. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the song, how it came to be, the writing process, and just the style of music and what you were inspired by when you wrote that song?
Well, I mean, stylistically, it's pretty Beatle-y, that's for sure. The sort of fairground sound to it. You know, I did like a little version of it probably about early 90s. And I've got that on a reel-to-reel tape somewhere, but I don't have a reel-to-reel player.
Right.
And then sort of over the years, I had been writing, you know, as you're writing songs, just ones that didn't really fit maybe with albums or whatever that I was working on at the time. I sort of put them off to the side and then eventually collected them all in sort of a package. And so that was one of the ones that kind of wasn't really fitting anywhere else, but it fit in on, it's not really an album of scraps, but different.
Yeah. It wouldn't have been out of place, I would say, on the Beatles, the Magical Mystery Tour album, something like that. It's that that sort of time period.
This is the wrong phrase, like a canticle, like a tale, like a, that type of slightly offbeat harmonic sort of rhythm as such, rather than it, I understand what I'm trying to say, but you guys probably got, but more of a concept, like a tale, I suppose.
I know what you say.
If that makes sense.
It is a tale. And so it's on an album called, and I apologize if I pronounce this wrong, Mr. Poirier. Is that
Mr.
correct?
Mr. Poirier, yep.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us about that album and just the name and the process?
So like I said, it was, you know, just songs that I liked but didn't fit into the more just sort of straight acoustic folk I was doing prior. And Mr. Poirier itself was a pretty early song. It was just a name I picked up from that lived in the area. The song doesn't have anything to do with him, but, you know, you use the name.
Does he know you use the name, though? That's the question. Does he know?
I don't think so.
I'm just thinking, like, royalties and all of that.
There's lots of Poiriers around.
All right.
And so I sort of organized the album into a sort of vague sort of storyline or plot line of sort of the loss and regaining of hope. And when you find the old man of Mao, that was sort of a, you know, that was on the good side of things, on the upswing, looking at things from a different angle. And you see some things that you're looking for.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it is interesting. I must admit, I did like the way that you worked it in, and actually probably maybe took it a little bit in the story from the two boys that you in your book. But it certainly added something to me, added a little bit of mystery. I certainly enjoyed hearing the song. I certainly enjoyed hearing the album as well. It's very, very different to anything else that, you know, maybe I'd listen to. Although I have to say, I do love the Beatles.
I think Adam saying he loves the Beatles is probably a little bit of an understatement. I think, you know, other than Morrissey, who you might know or don't know, the Beatles is probably one of Adam's most loved sort of groups, I suppose, and talks about them all the time. So, you know, for him to say it's in that Beatles-esque sort of style is quite a compliment. I'll be absolutely honest with you, which is credit to yourself, Trevor, obviously.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, I'd be interested then to hear about how you got into music and some of the, I mean, I think when I've listened to your stuff, certainly the folky stuff, I can hear the Beatles and I can hear a little bit of Bob Dylan in there as well. So I wasn't surprised to read on your website that those were two people or two musically minded folks who had inspired you over the years. So I'll be interested to hear what got you started, you know, where you learned to play instruments, et cetera, and just a few things like that.
Well, my folks had an amazing record collection. Like you and it spanned, you know, from everything I listed, you know, from Sinatra to Hendrix, kind of all steps in between. And of course, they were the 60s when they grew up, right? You know, as far as some things like the Beatles and the Beach Boys and the Who, you're listening to that stuff from the time you're born. And yeah, so you just, they're big music fans. You're listening to music all the time. You know, you see the neighborhood musician. I remember seeing John Penoyer on stage when I was in grade 8. He did a little thing at the high school. And I just, wow, that's awesome, right? So you save up your summer money, buy a guitar, and a friend of my dad teaches me a few chords, and you sort of just keep going from there.
In terms of sort of the inspiration for your music and your songwriting and everything else, is it, because I love music and I've got a widely eclectic sort of love of music as such, and as you said, anything from Guns N' Roses to ABBA to the Beatles to whoever, you know, just different ranges, different styles. I could never ever see myself writing a song because I don't think I'm creative enough. So what's your inspiration for your stories? Is it just literally sort of walking around your local village, your local town, and seeing somebody or seeing something, thinking, that sparks like a, that sounds pretty cool, or that looks pretty cool, or, and then you delve into a little bit of the research, make sure you get your facts right, and then what comes first? Is it the lyrics? Is it the music? How does that work?
Well, it's sort of different. And it sort of depends maybe on the style I'm writing. So I used to tour around a lot, just solo acoustic.
Right.
So writing in that vein and sort of more topical songs, you know, something in the news, world events are really going to sort of inspire what you write. And then, you sort of start strumming out the chords and the melody comes to you and you've got those first words that you really want to plug in there that first came to your head. Yeah. And sort of, you know, keep going and plug in the rest as you go along. A more popular tune might be a bit different. I was a big, huge Prince fan as well.
Right.
I have a song called Wendy M, which is more like a tribute to Wendy Melvoin, his guitarist in The Revolution. And that sort of, you know, when Prince passed away, I just started sort of playing more with those sounds again that I grew up with. And I don't really tour around anymore, so I can record in any style I want to. I don't have to stick to my solo acoustic stuff.
Right.
You know, that was probably more of a case with an idea, but music really came first on that particular thing. Right. So it all changes depending on the song.
So at what point, I mean, did you sort of say, right, music is the thing I want to do? Was it always something you felt as though you wanted to do? Was there something that you did prior to music, which then some music took over? Or, you know, at what point were you like, no, this is something I really, really want to do, and I feel as though I can make a sort of living out of it as such?
When you save up your summer jobs and get your guitar.
Yeah.
And then, you know, take it serious. It, right from that point on, you're like, I mean, this is what you love to do, how you express yourself, and just what makes you happy, right?
Yeah, I think that's important with music. I think something about the song that probably predates maybe even language. I think just that rhythmic nature, you know, that before we can communicate with each other, maybe as cavemen, I do think, you know, there's music and rhythm that was in there somewhere along the way. And obviously we developed that. And it is a way of speaking to the heart, isn't it, sometimes? And like you say, stuff like the Beatles, I love the Beatles. And some of their music is very, very clever. Like Guy says, I love Morrissey because lyrically, I think he's very witty and he's very clever. And I can take something from the song that somebody else could listen to and take something completely different.
Yeah.
What message, you know, what's important to you about music? What sort of thing grips you?
I think the sort of the story, like you said, you know, it's nice when it's sort of a universal, you know, something that speaks to, you know, I might be here and I can talk about something, but you guys are going to get it or take something from it. That's definitely where I started, you know, really the communication and the sort of folk stuff. I really gravitated towards that. And there's nothing, you know, a catchy melody's nice. It's nice to tap your foot and, you know.
100%.
And you know, without being, I mean, I'm not musical at all. I don't play any instruments, but music is very emotive.
I can confirm that it's not.
I could probably play a triangle every night, just like give me a nod and you're like, ding, you know. But I mean, music's very emotive, isn't it? It manifests itself and people listen to it. And as you said, Ad, you can get two different people listening to the same song and they will pick out different bits of the lyrics that are particularly pertinent to them. And it is very emotive. So if you can write something that I suppose different people at different times can take different things away from, then that's like the A game, isn't it? That's like, you know, your home run type thing. That's what you're after. It's creating those feelings, I suppose. And, you know, I'm a complete novice at it, having never done it, but I can imagine it's that feeling of stirring an emotion in somebody else that's listening to something that you've created would be like, I mean, that for me, I mean, that sounds like phenomenal, does it? And it sounds amazing.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think that's a little bit what we try and do with the podcast. Mostly we fail, but we do try.
Oh, people take a lot from the podcast. Not necessarily what we want, but, you know, that's the way it goes.
That's it. We make people laugh on intention.
Those Smith songs are probably a really good example of people, you know, people interpreting them all sorts of different ways, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's strange because the Smiths and Morrissey, I'm not a massive fan. I think he's incredibly morose and downbeat and this, that, and the other. Whereas Adam is like, he's like up there with Hendrix and whoever is a songwriter and a lyricist. And so it's strange that we can, I suppose Adam has a greater love and appreciation for music than I do. And our tastes are very eclectic, both of us really. So Adam perceives sort of, you know, Morrissey in one way and I perceive him in just something completely different. So from Morrissey's point of view, he's like, great, because I've got these two people that perceive me in two completely different ways. Mm. And that's what you want, isn't it? It's just to stir those emotions.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Do you get much feedback from people who listen to you? You know, where, I mean, obviously, first of all, probably quite peculiar that a small podcast from the north of England has reached out to you. But do you hear much from other people listening to your music? And, you know, what's the kind of stuff that people say?
Yeah, that's funny. Just when there's random ones like this just all of a sudden that will come out of nowhere. That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah,
or places you know, places that I've played that want to get you back, you know, continue. They drop you a line every couple of years and, you know, you got to get back here. And one of my newer projects was an album called Soundtrack to an Unmade Western, which is essentially what it is. Although I've got the kind of script in my head, and for some reason it seems to be popular in Brazil.
Right, okay. So you're going to make the Western in Brazil then? Okay, I get it. Yeah. Completely. All you need to do, we've got a couple of directors and various other things. So, you know, we can try and hook you up. I mean, I don't know whether they film in Brazil or not, but
Florida.
Well, yeah.
Maybe Florida, yeah.
Right here in Kamloops. Kamloops is sort of part of a desert. Right. So it looks, you know, sort of like the Northern California you'd see in Western movies or something, right? So,
okay.
Film it right here.
Yeah, that'd be ideal. That'd be ideal for a Western.
Yep.
Just that you mentioned there about performing on stage and people asking you to come back. Now, I love going to concerts. I love going to gigs and seeing people perform. What I'd love to know from your perspective, what it's like being on stage and getting the feedback from a crowd and how that feels. And for a start, the thing that would ever put me up doing it is the nerves. Do you get nervous before you go on?
Yeah, for sure. I know I would now. It's been I don't play live really. So and I played in a Beatles tribute band.
Okay.
In the sort of early 90s. And with that same group of guys, we had another band. So going to solo acoustic was definitely nerve-wracking. The first times you're going on stage by yourself, that's a whole different feeling, right? And then so, you know, a great crowd, it has to be a two-way thing, you know. Yeah. You as the performer put that energy out, and if you don't get it back, it can be tough. And so, and that's where as a solo performer, if it's sort of, you know, not a great night, it can take a lot of energy out. If you're with your band, you can get it from your buddies beside you, right? And keep the energy up. So those that's just the difference between performing in those different styles. But I mean, when the crowd's with you, it's the best, right?
So we have a sort of phrase in the UK, you know, you various musicians and they go to working men clubs and pubs and clubs and all the way up to sort of arenas and stadiums and so on and so forth. So we always have a phrase and it's like, oh, I've played to one man and his dog sort of thing. So, you know, you see these people trying to make a living and they rock up into a pub or a club or a saloon or whatever it is that is the sort of Canadian equivalent. And you walk up and you're like, really? Like, this is it? And you've got, like, no disrespect to people who are probably on slightly older than the, you know, you would want them to be. Probably looking at them, don't really like your music. You look around, you think, crikey, there's no one else in. And you start strumming away. And then it's like, wow, okay, I'm singing to that wall in front of me because there's nobody watching me. So is that something you've ever had yourself? Have you been fortunate enough to sort of never have that? Because there's a couple of people I know that happens all the time sort of thing.
Oh yeah, that definitely happens.
So what's the worst one? Come on, tell the story. What's the worst place in terms of sort of you've been booked for a venue and you've been booked to go and play? I'll say solo because obviously you said that there at times could be the worst because you've got no bandmates to sort of fall back on. So what's the worst experience you've had on stage then in terms of you playing solo and thinking, God, this is going bad?
I played one place one time that was just sort of a just extremely, I found it funny because they booked a lot of music, but you were extremely background music while people were eating, right? And probably sort of topical serious folk music wasn't the best fit. If I was, you know, probably playing some covers, popular covers,
yeah,
would have been a better fit for the venue. So you play one like that and it's tough if you sing a song about 9/11. Well, they're just trying to enjoy their dinner.
Yeah, so a bit of lounge music, you know, covers might be great, but yeah,
it just doesn't jive. Nobody's wrong. They just, it's not working out.
No. It's nobody's fault. It's just the way it is.
Just not ready for it.
Absolutely. So okay. So the flip side then is have you ever been to somewhere where in a way you felt as though, oh crikey, this possibly isn't going to work, but actually then you start to play and the energy of the crowd then sort of got to you and you felt as though you turned it around, but you know, you went, actually that went a little better than I perhaps thought it was going to right at the start?
Yeah, that's definitely happened. I can't think of a specific one where it's turned around, but I know that it has, where it's just like more if you're doing more the cafe sort of thing, that can sort of happen. Right. People are kind of visiting and then they perk up and start paying attention and get into it. Right. There's a little town here called Christina Lake. They, I've played there a few times. They really seem to get me for some reason. They get the little tiny little jokes in the songs and it's just one of those places that's always worked for me, and that's just random, right? But it's good.
But it works.
Yeah, for sure.
That's cool. So, obviously, so you said you were in a Beatles cover band, which was called Revolution 9, unless I'm mistaken.
Correct.
Yeah. You see, Adam's the one that does the research. You see, you always rely on beans.
Yeah. I mean, I'm obviously very familiar with that particular song off the White Album.
Yep.
Yeah, as it's affectionately called. Was that the kind of music that you, is that the era of the music that you played from the Beatles, or did you do the full shebang?
Well, we did everything. Yeah, right from early. So it's always sort of start off or go sort of chronologically in a show. Always start off early for sure.
And then, oh, cool. And were you John, Paul, Ringo?
Well, so that's where we, I don't know, fell down as a tribute band. We weren't strict. We didn't, once did we ever do a sort of costume change sort of thing. And we weren't strict about whoever could sing that particular song best sang the song.
He's definitely Paul.
You think?
Yeah, definitely Paul, 100%.
I don't play bass, so I play bass, but I didn't play bass in the band.
Yeah, it'd have to really be George or John.
Yeah, go for John.
Yeah. The Beatles. That was a terrible Scouse accent. I did.
That was good. Well, so that brings me to my question for you guys, was where you're at, are you, where do you, who do you cheer for, Liverpool or Manchester?
Ooh. now.
Or do you, is there somewhere closer that I don't know about?
No, Liverpool's very close. But
So I support a team from the city of Liverpool, but I actually support Everton. So I'm an Everton fan. So Liverpool to me is like a cursed word. That's just like, they play red, we play in blue. That's just not happening. So I'm an Everton fan. Adam supports a football team from London, a team called Arsenal. So we're sort of about 3 hours, 3.5 hours apart in terms of travel or football teams. And Everton was the first team that I watched live. So that was why I selected them. They were the first team. So you go watch them, you see them, that's it. You can't change your colours. That's your team through thick or thin, and it's been a lot of thin at the moment. we suck at the moment. We're terrible. And have done for some time. Adam's on the crest of a wave at the moment because Arsenal are actually doing all right. So.
Yeah, we are. Arsenal did incredibly well about 20 years ago. I've been following them a little bit longer than that. And yeah, at the moment, Arsenal are playing incredibly well. In fact, if you've watched them today, they just won 6-0 away at West Ham. Which is sweet because my brother's a West Ham fan.
And whilst we're on about sports, obviously I'm going to support the Chicago Bears in the Super Bowl. Oh no, maybe not tonight because the Bears aren't in the Super Bowl tonight because the Bears suck as well.
It's the theme of the sports teams you follow, isn't it?
All right, steady on. Both myself and Ad, we're huge sort of NFL fans and I suppose American sports really, but NFL is a sport that we sort of both know probably the most about. We've done a couple of podcasts on the NFL, and we've been lucky enough to have a few people on that have sort of presented NFL shows on other podcasts, TV, and this, that, and the other. So I will be staying up a little bit later just to watch the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, Adam has I did extend the invitation for Adam to come over to us and have a few beers and some snacks and this, that, and the other, and watch the Super Bowl. But oh no, I'm too tired.
I'm working in the morning.
I'm not, you see, so that's great.
So in terms of sports up there in Canada, obviously ice hockey is very big in Canada.
The Canucks. Are they Canadian? Are the Canucks? Is that a team from Canada?
Vancouver.
Well, yeah. Oh, there you go. You see?
You're not too far away.
You see? There you go. You see?
About 4 hours away.
That's about as far as my NHL.
There's quite a few, actually, in the NHL. Like,
you got Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah, the Oilers as well. Winnipeg have got a team as well, I think. Yeah. So, did you follow the ice hockey up there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, played hockey growing up. And I mean, everyone used to play hockey growing up, really. It's less and less. I think it's expensive.
Right.
Probably, I don't know if it's... I think its popularity amongst kids might be waning. I'm not sure.
Is that because of the growth of maybe the NFL or the NBA? As such, has that sort of taken over in Canada? Because obviously, obviously the climate in Canada, you would expect, lends itself to ice hockey because it's fudging freezing a lot of the time up there. So, you know,
I don't know. NBA could be. I don't know that NFL would be affecting that as much, but basketball does happen. Basketball's a winter sport, right?
Yeah.
So, same time, I think a lot of people can't afford it.
Okay.
The equipment's expensive, the ice time's expensive.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it like that, but when you look at actually taking it up as a sport, in terms of over here, like, you know, soccer's absolutely massive. NFL's growing, but soccer's absolutely massive. But really, all you need is a football and a couple of jumpers for goalposts.
Exactly.
So you need football boots or whatever, and although nowadays you don't really need the shin pads, but back in the day you needed the shin pads, and that's almost about it, really. The football, and you'd have one of your mates out of 10 and say, oh, I've got a football, there you go, crack on. Whereas, I suppose, your ice hockey, everybody has to have skates, everybody has to have the pads, I suppose, and you need an area to play on it. You can't just go and play on it on a field. It needs to be frozen, you know, I suppose. Yeah.
So you asked us about soccer. Is that something that's of interest to you?
No. As a kid, the Vancouver Whitecaps,
yep.
They were, sort of popular when I was a kid. And Pelé was a big deal, right?
Well,
you guys will hate that, you know, I kind of World Cup time, I pull for France.
I don't know, but I suppose that, you know, is it like just less than half of Canada speaks French or whatever? Is it spoken language? I mean, obviously, is it Quebec is the main French?
Quebec, speaker? Yeah, New Brunswick.
Yeah. Hey,
it was...
I won't hold that against you. It's fine.
It was Zidane that, you know, I saw, you start watching him play and some magical stuff. And so I just stuck with him. I have no real good reason other than that.
I don't have a problem with that. Like, literally half the French squad will play for Arsenal at some time. We got a lot of this players.
Yeah, you did, to be fair.
Thierry Henry is a god in this household.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Anyway, back to music.
one of our famous left turns. So what I'd like to talk about, with you being a musician as well, so I've tried to get hold of one of your CDs. Whenever we get someone on the podcast who produces something like that, when we've had authors on, I'll always buy one of the books. But actually trying to get hold of your CDs in the UK is incredibly, incredibly hard. Tell us about that as a musician, about streaming platforms and how that's affected you and CD sales and what have you.
CD sales are gone. If you play live, people will buy CDs live. It's sort of a little bit of memorabilia almost, you know, from the show, I think. But I would always, I use a platform called CD Baby, and they get your stuff through them. You're on Spotify, Apple Music, right, et cetera, et cetera. And they would also, once upon a time, distribute actual physical CDs as well. I don't believe they do anymore. And then with even stores like HMV, they're gone here. So there's no place for physical CD sales anymore.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? That's a shame. You, like you say, you started off talking about your parents' record collection, and there is something very beautiful about the artwork. There's something very beautiful about holding something like that. When you place that needle onto the vinyl and hearing the crackle, there's something very magical about I think.
I remember you a number of years ago now. I mean, we're the wrong side of 50, or, you know, but I remember you sort of saying, there's something magical about the sound of the record player and the sound of the music that's produced from the needle and so on. And you know, you've got your, was it you like your 9-inch or whatever, and that's gone. Is that a shame? Does everybody want just the streaming crystal clear?
Well, I think that there was, you know, when you were putting some effort and care into it. You put your record on the platter, you put your needle down, and you were taking the time to do it.
You're invested in it, aren't you?
Yeah, and even with the CD, maybe slightly less, but you were still grabbing it, putting it in the player, pressing play. And I think there's maybe a lack of appreciation a little bit with streaming. It's just on all the time. And it's easy. It's a click of the button.
And you can skip. And that's the thing, whereas on the old vinyl, it was, as you said, you have to take care. You have to then remove the needle. You have to remove the LP. You know, you have to then replace it and so on. So there's care and there's love.
You dust off that record before you start it. There was all sorts of, you were physically connected, emotionally connected to putting that on and doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I do think there's something that's lost there with that. And obviously it's made a bit of a resurgence. You know, you can buy them and the quality now is phenomenal, but you still do get that magical little bit of crackle when you play the record.
Yeah. And you know, you'll get some retro shops and this, that, and the other. And if you scour hard enough, you can find them and you can find the places. And I'm not saying online, but you can travel to certain places and think, oh, we'll go through. And I remember, you know, you rifle through and you've got the draw and the really alphabetical order and you go to the shop and you have they got it? They haven't got it. Because back in the day, you couldn't search to see where they had it. You just took it on a chance that they would have it. And you go there, and you're like, oh, they haven't got it. And then, you know, you got talking and somebody said, oh, well, we haven't, but you know, the next town down, they've got a shop, they might have it. And you're like, oh, I'll go there. And it's that I suppose that magical sort of tour to find
it is, it's something lost, like you say, in terms of streaming. And from what I gather, when you hear about like musical artists talking about streaming platforms, as fantastic as it is that it's there, it's on tap, you're in your car, you can listen to anything by anybody at any time, for the people who actually produce the music, the pennies that they're making for it's virtually nothing, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's a shame.
Yeah. I mean, it was more, you know, exciting when someone in Brazil bought an album.
Yeah.
What did that happen? And it's pretty cool that people, you know, you can kind of see the countries that are streaming and where things are streaming. So it's interesting. but you would get more of when someone bought an album, you would get that sort of response that you mentioned earlier. Someone might send you a note and picked your album over here and wherever. It was neat.
So, obviously you mentioned Brazil a lot. Sort of in terms of you being aware of where your music is sort of downloaded, streamed, purchased, I mean, sort of, is it more South American, obviously North American, but is it more South American? Or is there any way into sort of Europe or any other places in the world that you're aware of?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's the cool part, I guess, about streaming is that you can, it's literally worldwide.
Right.
So, you know, somewhere in Asia, all of a sudden you just, oh, what? And you wonder, how did they ever come across it? The same thing, you know, it's as weird as me writing a song about the old Man of Mao here in BC, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or how has Brazil outstreams Canada for me?
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. So why? It's just weird. It's interesting. And how come? I have no idea.
Yeah.
Someone somewhere found something once and shared it with their friends. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's bizarre. Have you ever heard from anybody else then in England about your song about Mao Cop?
Just when I was kind of doing my research to make sure I had, you know, my sort of facts straight, and I reached out to, I don't have his name on my fingertips here, but the guy running the website,
the
Mao Cop website.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I do. I think it's fantastic. I do. Anything like that that's quite peculiar. And don't get me wrong, there's probably 100 songs out there about different bizarre places around the world.
Yeah, but we find it amazing because it's local to us and it's topical to us. And the fact that we've done a podcast, obviously for a different reason, but we've done a podcast about it before. And then all of a sudden, like you pop up, it's like, oh my God, it's just. But that's magical. That's absolutely magical that a guy that's however many thousands of miles away from Mao Corp can get in touch with and do a podcast with a couple of douchebags that are like 2 minutes away from Mao Corp. And it's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
In my mind, or, you know, I'm assuming everyone there has a copy of the book signed and, you know.
Never heard of the book.
No.
We hadn't heard of the old
didn't
man
even know Man of Mao. You forget the book. I didn't even know what the book was written about.
No, I did. I, at some point, I'll make a pilgrimage to it and I'll take a photograph of myself next year.
You do that. We'll do that.
We'll do that. Yeah.
We'll make a pledge. We'll do that together. Yeah.
100%. 100%. So, like you say, in terms of your music styles, like, you don't feel like you have to be pigeonholed and stick with one particular style. So, the likes of, is it Wendy M, the song Wendy M? That has got real, I would have sort of said it was an 80s funk sound to it. So when you said that you like Prince, yeah, I get that.
You get that, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that song.
It's about my high school crush, you know, my 1984 crush on Wendy Melvoin. When that album, as you guys know, if you seem similar vintage to me, that was huge. You couldn't. Yeah. It was just always on. Let's Go Crazy and Purple Rain. Those two songs were like every day. So yeah, throughout the 80s, I was a big Prince fan. And, you know, after he passed away, like I said, I just started experimenting or playing with those sounds again. And that song's idea just sort of came to me. The sort of B-side to that song was a called Celery and Cheese, which was...
About celery and cheese, maybe?
Yes. Well, not really. But Wendy and Lisa, who went on to have their own band together from the Revolution, I was big into them as well. And I sort of wrote that song years ago in the 90s when I was listening to them all the time.
I have a question.
Yes.
And I refer you back to what you mentioned earlier in the podcast in terms of Mr. Poirier. Not knowing that that song was about him, does Wendy know that that song is about her?
I know that they have heard, well, I guess I don't know. Someone on their Twitter feed knows about it. But I was really hoping that they would get really even more behind it. That would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I think they've heard it. Yep.
Right.
I hope so. I hope so for their sake. And some of your other albums as well, like you say, the... what was it, the soundtrack to an unmade Western. It is fantastic. It is exactly what you would expect. If I say that to you, I think you get a pretty good picture in your mind of what it would sound like.
100%. I can imagine what that sound. I apologize. I haven't heard the album, but I can imagine absolutely what that sounds like. And actually, I can't wait for the film to be made.
No, just keep making. But your other art, so other stuff like Another Something then. Tell us about that. And like I say, you tend to, your style changes a lot over the different albums and the different singles that you've released.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, mostly in that sort of solo acoustic 60s folk sort of style. There's a few Beatley things in there as well. I seem to, I can't really avoid them. Sometimes even then. The new project I'm sort of working on, I have to consciously try to not be too Beatly. It just, I can't help it. No. But that album, yeah, sometimes I think maybe it got a little bit too Dylan-y on me, but that's where my head was at, and that's what I was performing like. I listened to it recently, and I think it stands up pretty good.
Yeah.
So is that something that's really difficult, you find really difficult in terms of, when you're trying to write new material, is trying to not revisit old ground almost, and trying to almost reinvent yourself every now and then? So I think, well, actually, yeah, I've done a couple of albums and they're quite Beatly, or they're quite folky, or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Is that quite difficult then, to think like not to default back to your like, and like that almost like that baseline? It's like, well, actually, I am quite Beatly and I am quite folky. So if I'm trying to write something different, is it difficult to then move away from that?
Not necessarily difficult. I mean, some of those songs, they lend themselves to that. That's what they're going to be. And that's how I write.
Yes.
But you also want like to try to stand out. I think, you know, there was that neat time that you hear about Brian Wilson versus the Beatles he's trying to, you know, do better than the other. And, you know, I still think, you know, if the Beatles are the hallmark, they're still the competition. So you're trying to do one better than them, or you're trying to do one better than Dylan. Well, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm wording that right, but
no, absolutely makes sense. I'm fascinated by if the lyrics come first, and I don't know, but if ever you've got the lyrics that would come first, and then you're looking for the melody, or then you're looking for the soundtrack that sort of sits behind that. Are you then really conscious to think, well, actually, I need to make sure that those lyrics fit to a different genre or style than the Beatles or than Hendrix or whoever? And is that how it works? So you think, well, actually, I can't make it sound like that because that would be reverting back to type?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes just, boy, that's just, I can play in those styles fairly easily and comfortably.
Right.
So, you know, can you mix them up differently? If I'm doing something, it's like, how can I bring that 80s Prince influence in?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard, they don't fit together. But when you can do it, then that's maybe a little more original sounding, a little bit different than
You see, the only reason I ask is, so back in the day, I was a bit of an REM fan, and their sing, so they did a song called Night Swimming, and it's like a melodic sort of, and I'm assuming you know the song.
Yep.
But the story goes is that they were in the studio and that they came up with the lyrics, and actually the lyrics were due to fit a completely different type of song. So it wouldn't have sounded like Night Swimming. And so they had the lyrics, but then they said it just doesn't quite fit. So what they did is they then just changed the music, changed the melody, changed the style and the feel of the song. And then they just effectively, they had an idea what the lyrics should sound like, but then when they tried to play it, it didn't quite fit. So they then just stripped it completely back and just absolutely just changed the song. And it became very slow and, you know, that melodic sort of beat from Night Swimming, which I love. And I'm trying to imagine what that would sound like in a much more up-tempo. And I'm thinking it just doesn't fit. And like, that doesn't work. And I just wonder whether, and that's why I asked the question in terms of how do you know which type of lyric fits which type of melody or beat or whatever, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And I probably take more time with that now of revisiting a song, and you know, it's not quite there, let's you know, change a chord progression, slow it down, speed it up. Yeah. And try to make it fit, like, as you're saying, that wasn't working for them. So they
changed things up. Yeah. And I remember, and Michael Stipe said it just wasn't. And I don't think it was him that wrote the lyric. It was one of the band members. And I remember just saying it just didn't quite fit. It didn't feel like that was the right fit for those lyrics. So therefore they changed it up, or changed it down, really, and made it much more, a much slower sort of beat. And then he said, wow. And they had like a mega hit with it and so on. So just curious as to, you know, the process that you go through.
Yeah. Changing the lyrics, or sorry, the music to fit the lyrics, like I say, I would probably do that more now.
Right.
And not so much, you know, at that point, it's really almost trial and error. Like, this really isn't working. And, you know, this chord here, let's change it to something else. And that, just the changing of that chord is going to, you know, pull that melody a little bit one way, you know, or you put a minor chord here and there, and it's going to, maybe it sounds a little more somber. Change it up like that. Where, you know, maybe with the more acoustic folk stuff, it just fell naturally to where it wanted to be.
Sure.
And do you think that's because that's what you're comfortable with? It's like a comfy pair of shoes. You just slip on a little bit more easy.
I think so. Yeah. But you don't want to. You have to kind of try to fight against that, right?
No, 100%. 100%. So you said about you're working on a current project. I'd be interested to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's sort of a mix, probably trying to make a mix of, and get into some sort of coherent package of every style of music. I'm a Buddy Holly fan, so that would be my early 50s sort of, and take it right up through everything I've liked, Beatles, Dylan, Beach Boys, through the 80s, and Prince, and try to Wilco, and try to get a little bit of all those influences and try to get them in some sort of package that is me.
It's incredible because, as I say, being non-musical, and you talk through your influences and you say the Beatles, Hendrix, Dylan, Prince, and I'd argue maybe that a couple of those are similar, but there's definitely a couple that are different than each other. So I find it fascinating that somebody who's writing their own material, writing their own music, writing their own lyrics, tries to get those influences in. And it must be really difficult to think, well, I not I'm paying homage to Prince as such, but trying to get the influences of Prince into a song, but then thinking, but I don't really want to discard like my Beatles background or my Hendrix background, and that must be really difficult. And what I want to talk about really is, in terms of releasing an album, is there a flow through the album which would be, well, actually the first two or three maybe would be more Prince influenced, and then you would maybe look at more Hendrix influenced, or is it just a sort of, not a mishmash, that's a horrible disparaging word, and I apologize, but is it more of a, it's one of them and then it's one of them and one it's them, or is it more of a flow through the album in terms of styles?
I think an album, generally it's nice if there's some sort of flow to it as a listener, but then there's some great rambling albums. We talked about the White Album, that is just all over the map, and it's almost jarring sometimes going from one song to the other. So that can work as well. Generally, I think, you know, it's nice if it has a sort of certain flow to it as a listener, but then there's that little argument against to put something grating, you know, a nice quiet song, then the next one's just a real rocker.
Right.
Is sometimes, you know, wakes the listener up. It's good.
So what's your end goal out of this? What do you want to achieve out of writing songs and recording music?
Oh, well, if I could make a really good living out of it, that would be excellent.
Woo! <Yeah. laughs>
But, you know, it's just something that I just love to come up and play my guitars and you write songs. That's just part of who I am and what I do. And it has, you know, for 40 years kind of thing. So you just don't stop. You can't help it, right?
Just forever evolve, I suppose, and just keep going and just keep doing what you love.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's, the instruments are pretty big part of that. You know, they different instruments make you create in different ways.
Right.
So
yeah, that makes sense. Talking of instruments, so when you're recording and you're recording the songs and you're laying those tracks down, do you use other musicians there with you, or is it something that you record just by yourself?
Sort of a mix. Guitar parts, guitar and bass stuff I'll do usually all myself. If there's something that I know someone can really hit it out of the, you know, a different angle than I can, yeah, it's nice to get them involved. And then if I need, I'm pretty rudimentary keyboard player, so if I need something a little better, or again, another sort of style that I don't have, you know, you get other guys in. And then drummers, I did drum on the songs on Unmade Western. There's only two of them with drumming on them.
Right.
If it's straightforward, maybe I can do it, but it's usually probably a good idea to get a real drummer involved.
I've got a question, and I've been wanting to ask it for a while, and I'm going to tee you up now just to celebrate you and what you've done, because I asked what was the time that you bombed, and it was horrendous. What I want to ask is, like, what's your favorite experience, either being on stage or being in a studio or being with band members, or so, like, not your crowning moment in terms of downloads or sales, but for you, the bit that thinks, yeah, if someone says to you, what does music mean to me, what was that one bit, that one either performance or that one studio session or whatever it may be, that you think, yes, that's it?
Well, it's sort of two things, I guess, really. I love recording and studio work best of all. I just like that creative side of it, and writing the songs, recording them, working on them. But, you know, I mean, that old band, I love playing with those guys.
Yeah.
You know, there's that feeling, and I often think back, oh, you know, why didn't we do that song? And man, we would have nailed that. We should have, you know, and I think about, yeah, just those times with those guys were a lot of fun.
It must be fantastic to be part of a band. I'd love that. So you see, you know, we aren't musical. Yes, we have been in a band called Philosophical Spiderman. Yes, we have been in a band called Violent Disorder. Yes, we were absolutely terrible. The lyrics were appalling. Nobody could play any of the instruments and nothing was worth listening to. But I can tell you this, it was a hell of a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Oh, look, you know, as you say, Adam, would you call it music? I'm not sure.
White noise at best.
Yeah, white noise at best. But, you know, that sense of camaraderie, the sense of just we're in it, and yeah. And look, you know, I'm a big sportsman and played in lots of sports with teammates and stuff. And that camaraderie that you get is phenomenal. So I was just curious to know, yeah, and in a way I'm sort of pleased, and don't get me wrong, you know, your solo stuff, that your acoustic solo stuff is fantastic. But for you to say it's just almost like, let's just get the guys back together, let's get the band back together, and we'll just do that one set, that one, all the songs that over the years we felt, I really wish we'd have done that, or we could have done that, or we should have done that, just write them down and then get the whole band back together, find a venue and just go, we're just going to do these songs. If we end up playing to one man and his dog, I don't really care, but we're just going to feel it, love it, enjoy it, and that's the best that we can possibly be. And for me, that camaraderie is second to none.
Indeed. And just in terms of music, like Gaz says, we're around about the hour mark now, which is where we tend to bring it to a close. So I listen to the Old Man of Mao, I listen to Mr. Poirier, and to be honest with you, my little lad JJ absolutely loves the Old Man of Mao. He will dance. He dances around the front room, listen to it. It's fantastic. But it's a song that follows it that I love. Light Flowers is it? I think that is a fantastic song, and I've added it to one of my playlists. So it will get regularly listened to in this household.
Awesome.
Absolutely brilliant song, dude. That is fantastic. I was trying to think what it was reminiscent to, because it wasn't as Beatlesy as the rest of the other stuff, but it has almost, it reminded me of some of the indie stuff of the early, maybe early to late 90s, maybe that sort of time. But yeah, just the ballads that some of those guys have put out. Absolutely love that song. So thank you very much for that entering into my life. So
perfect. Awesome.
No, pleasure, absolute pleasure. Honestly, I really enjoyed listening to it. I really enjoyed meeting you as well today, Trevor. So we wrap it up around about the hour mark. So have you got one final thought you'd like to chuck out to our listeners? Tell them where they can find your music, etc.
Well, there's trevorcaswell.com, which is probably about due for a real refresh. But yeah, Trevor Caswell on Spotify, Apple Music, any of the streaming services that you use, that's probably the best way to check stuff out.
Yeah, 100%. Gaz, what are your thoughts for today?
Oh, look, as I said right at the start, I love getting guests onto our podcast, people that we haven't had before. I found the whole story fascinating, that Trevor can write a story from thousands of miles away about a place that's 5 minutes down the road from where we are. But not just that, just listening to a story, listening to the influences he's had and how he goes about his storytelling and his songwriting, and absolutely fascinating. Like I said, I'd love to be more musical. I love music. I can't sing. I can't play an instrument. But I would love to be just that creative spark. So, Trevor, I just want to thank you really just for the insight into your story, into your journey. And all I can say is just keep doing what you're doing. And you know, let's just hope that the people in South America keep downloading your music and long may it continue.
Yeah, absolutely. God bless them Brazilians.
Yep, for sure. There you go. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Oh, no, absolute pleasure. And, you know, you've got two fans over here, like I say. It blows our mind. It does absolutely blow our mind that we got that song out there, The Old Man I'm Out, and it's taken me all these years to find it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much for your time. We wish you all the best with all the music that you're going to release in the future, and we will be keeping a keen eye out for it. If you ever want to come on this podcast again and promote whatever music you are recording or doing at the time, you are more than welcome. So thank you. Awesome. Thank you very much for joining us.
And thanks again.
Oh, absolute pleasure. And for our listeners, we'll catch you all again next week when we will be talking about something completely different again.